Vehicle Registration Task Force, today being Tuesday, October 29th. Welcome, everybody, to the first meeting after the first meeting. It feels like, okay, now we're all settled and we got that out of the way, so that's great. So glad to have you all here. I think it's amazing how the difference in a room makes a difference in and where everybody is at, but we're familiar with the Senate room, so glad to have you all here. So if you notice on our agenda today, we do have a quorum, correct? Okay. Just note that we do have a quorum. And so if we have the minutes from September 25th meeting, and without objection, we'll adopt those minutes. Or Senator Jasinski, why don't you make the motion, make it more
Madam
official.
Chair, I make a motion to approve the minutes from the September 25th, 2019 meeting.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Anderson Kelleher. Is there any discussion as to the minutes? Okay, seeing none, motion to adopt the minutes as presented. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. Thank you very much, everybody. So the next item on the agenda is with the with Ms. Randall from the Legislative Auditor's Office. But before we go there, what was supposed to be on our agenda today was having a presentation on the various methods of having the vehicle registration fees, value, weight, suggested MSRP, variety of those things. And today we were supposed to have that presentation. I know this is a big issue because FAST is waiting for this decision to do their software. So I'm really, really disappointed. We got an email on Tuesday, it came on October 24th from MnDOT to the committee administrator, David Larson, who forwarded on to me. It was very last minute notice that says that, unfortunately, we will not have anything ready for presentation next week. We've been working for several weeks with DPS and recently received the data that will be used to analyze the major registration fee structure of a flat rate, weight-based, value-based, and age-based as assigned to the task force. Without this information, it'd be extremely difficult to even make a decision. So this is really hindering the work of the task force at not having this ready for us. And so I'm just wondering, I know we have a variety of folks here from MnDOT, Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, you're the Commissioner of Transportation, but Commissioner of DPS, so on and so forth. So can I have some, I did mention it to Ms. Corey prior to the meeting to give her a heads up and let her know she's new. So I, new as of September 1st, so you got at least a couple months. So can somebody please respond to this and inform me more and the whole task force as to why this could not be ready today.
Well, Madam Chair, if I could.
Ms. Anderson,
thank you. Mm-hmm. So MnDOT, from the time of the last meeting, made a request of DPS to receive the data. And I think with some changes in the office and other things, I believe we received the data late last week. And to be able to give you a thorough and good analysis, we can't turn that around in just a couple of days. You can understand that. But we do now have the raw data that we need to utilize that's updated. The last data we had was 2017, which really doesn't cut it in terms of being able to understand what the vehicle mix is and where we're at today. So Ms. Schrodel, our CFO, sent that email to Mr. Larson to make sure that everyone knew that we could not turn this around fast enough. I think that we want to make sure the data is accurate in terms of what we're running for the modeling. And I think, you know, I want to compliment DPS. It was a little bit, we had to work through a few issues in getting the data. They are going through a lot right now with the build out of the new software. And so we needed to make sure that what they're giving us is what we need to run the modeling.
Thank you very much. I certainly appreciate that, but I'd like somebody from DVS and Ms. Corey, if you could respond to the information given here in regards to getting the data. And by the way, just to mention, This is no surprise. We understand the FAST and the software, but the task force was created through legislation, which, you know, in May, this is no surprise that the purpose of the task force was to do this. A little anticipation while I recognize some of that, but nonetheless, this is a very time-sensitive thing. So, Ms. Corey, why don't you give us an update on what's going on at DVS and why the data was delayed getting to MnDOT?
Madam Chair, of course, first of all, it is a pleasure to be here. And as Senator Kiffmeyer mentioned, I recently joined DPS and DVS as the director, and am looking forward to serving this this group as needed, whether it in terms of data or otherwise, but also appreciate the opportunity to work with this group on several levels in the next several months and several years. And so in terms of the data, first of all, I certainly do want to own that MnDOT has been asking, along with Department of Revenue and a couple other partners that are all looking for this data, have been asking DPS for a while, and I completely own that we have not always given or provided the data in the format or in a manageable format for analysis for our partners. And so I want to give a lot of credit to Christy for just in the last 2 weeks for convening a group where all of our state agencies that are looking to provide this data and analyze it for the sake of this group here came into the same room and said, we're not asking for three different sets of data. We're all asking for one set of data, DPS. Get your act together. Get that data to us. I appreciate that approach. Our staff appreciated that approach. We asked for a point of contact at each of the agencies. We asked for what the exact data needs were. And from that point, we then got into the business of giving our partners what they need. And so that did happen only late last week, as Commissioner Kelleher mentioned. So it's about approximately 8 million records. And so we are certainly acknowledging that that's not a small amount of data that needs to be analyzed by our partners, and so ask for some ownership in the timeline on that from a DVS perspective, but certainly to continue to support this group in a timely manner into the future, and understanding the time sensitivity of this.
Thank you very much, Ms. Corey, and I really appreciate those comments, and especially the owning of it and documenting for MnDOT. Their frequent requests and all of that. So that's much appreciated, though we're still in a situation of time being an issue. So, Ms. Schrodel, I know that you sent this email and we have mm-hmm. to kind of work our way through. Can you just comment about this situation as well and also for the future?
Sure, Madam Chair. My name is Christy Schradel, and I'm the CFO at MnDOT, and we have actually been working with all the partners actually since August to try to pull the right information together, and it's a large feat. It's really important that we are all working from the same set of data. It's all work that our partners want to be on the same page with, and we fully intend to take our 8 million records, as Ms. Corey mentioned, and do the analysis on the four scenarios that the task force has been provided. And I apologize that we weren't able to turn it around more quickly, but we really do need a few weeks. We've got four scenarios. Obviously, we're in a situation where we have a blend of the sort of value and age right now, and I think we will look at each of those scenarios independently in the revenue-neutral matter that is prescribed in the task force statute, and we will get back to you. I think we need a couple weeks to turn it around, but I assure you we are able to do that.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schrodel. I appreciate that. I think what we will be looking for is a date specific that can be firm, that we can schedule and have our members here and members present so that we can do that. It's just a crucial decision for us to make, and my concern is for exactly that, the software development. I appreciate your comments, but maybe we can, if you can think about it during this period of time so that you and I can chat after the meeting and come together with a date for that.
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Schroedl. And I would also, Commissioner Harrington, I really appreciate your being here today. You and I chatted last week. Would you come on up and just make some comments since you're the commissioner of DPS and the lead agency in regards to some of this? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John Harrington, Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. I'm delighted to be here with both my Assistant Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner Tim Lino, and our new Director, Emma Corey, and our, all our other partners here as we begin our work with FAST to make the necessary changes so that we can collect the amount of revenue necessary to run the Department of to provide the revenue for the state of Minnesota through our Minnesota license and registration system, or whatever we're going to call it now. So,
fantastic. Thank you very much, Commissioner. I appreciate your support. When you and I chatted, I had no idea that this wasn't going to be happening for today. So I trust that you were as surprised as I was that this data was unavailable to MnDOT to do the necessary number crunching. So I appreciate your being available today. I know you have a very busy schedule, and I appreciate your presence today at this important meeting.
Senator Kiffmeyer, I can assure you that I was not aware that we did not have the data ready, and I also was not aware that it was that what we were able to pull together was 8 million records and that there were even more records that are going to be necessary in order for you to get a full and robust picture of what the different models will provide. And I can assure you that the Department of Public Safety will make sure that whatever data requests are received, that we are able to respond in an effective and a timely fashion from here on out.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. I've sensed that from you, and I appreciate a great deal. Thank you. I was wondering also if FAST is present today. My understanding is that they were. If someone is here from, thank you, sir. Would you come on up, and if there's anybody else from FAST here as well? Just you, okay, wonderful. And we'll need your name and title for the audio record as well for the members.
Good morning, Senator. My name is Ken Buna. I am an associate partner with FAST Enterprises, and I am the project director from the software perspective for the vehicle replacement.
Thank you very much. Would you just spell your last name for the record as well?
B-U-N-A.
That is so easy that it, when you spell it.
It's so easy, but it's not pronounced very well.
Yes, well, we've seen a variety of spellings of names, and yet when they're pronounced are quite simple but more difficult when spelled. But great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Mr. Buna. Would you go ahead and just comment about where you're at with MNLARS right now, especially in regards to the having the decision made for the software work that you are doing?
Sure. So far, the overall development is going well. We are building it as though nothing is going to change because we don't know if anything is going to change or not. So we are going to try and implement the same calculation rules that MNLARS had because we have to have something. We also have to have the ability to correct a registration from a prior period when we roll out. We are, however, encapsulating this calculation engine very specifically separately so that if the calculation does change, we'd be able to change it in one spot, and that change would be implemented across all parts of the software. So in reality, it's not like we're sitting around waiting for this answer before we can start. We have a massive undertaking, and this is an important part of it, but we do have to build what's there today. So we're good at this point.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, Mr. Buna. And especially the IT approach of being able to anticipate and to set your agenda in such a way that when the decision does come, but you're able to move on. I absolutely understand this is one key component, but there are many others to occupy your time, and I appreciate hearing that. Do you have a deadline by which we must have this decision made that is more crucial in the development software process?
Our current plan has the initial development being completed by the end of April. We would probably need a couple of months prior to that in order to fully develop it. If we were to have this decision by March 1st, we would be comfortable. That is, of course, assuming that the data that the calculation is based on is available.
Thank you, Mr. Boone. I would say that would be cutting it close, especially there are always issues, there are always things that happen, and I certainly would not want to be in that position. I would say, members, that by this fall or in the next month or so, as soon as we can get a look at that data, that we ought to be making a decision as soon as possible, because it enables the software to be tested, thoroughly tested, user tested. There are a variety of things that have to happen. So I am sure that will be very important to up that date.
It would be great if it was tomorrow, but we do have some flexibility there, so I was trying to make sure that we were being fair as well.
I appreciate your accommodations, Mr. Fast, yes. Mr.
That's
Boone.
My boss's name.
Okay. Oh, yes. Okay. Representative Peter Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the statute says we have to have our report done by towards the end of January, so that's kind of a hard, fast deadline for us already, if I'm correct.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. I would say that's the report, yes, in general, but the decision, yes, is much more urgent to be done prior to that for many reasons. Sorry? Yes, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, one thing that, and I appreciate that we're doing this work in a task force fashion, but it would be good to get clarity. I believe that what FAST is working with to build the system and the vehicle registration system is actually spelled out in statute. And so to make a change, I believe there would need to be a statutory change made to, if we're making a switch from a value-based system with a depreciation schedule to anything else. Is that your understanding, Madam Chair?
Well, it is my understanding that subsequent to the task force report that would be anticipated that we would follow it up with a task force-supported bill that would proceed both through the House and the Senate. We do it expeditiously, but I don't. The task force statute also says we must have this report and that it includes this decision. So those kind of things are going to have to take some overlap, but I would say our decision predates the statute. I mean, it's just what it has to be. Yes, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Dumai, just a couple of quick questions. I don't want to get us bogged down too much in the weeds, but the work that you're doing so far based on the current rate structure, would you characterize the work that you're doing as mostly configuration work, the kind that could typically be done by an end user, or are you going in already having to do custom coding in order to accommodate the current rate structure?
Mr. Boone.
Madam Chair, Representative Elkins, most of it is configuration, but most of the configuration is being done by development staff. I wouldn't categorize it as customization, which is basically saying these types of calculations are calculations we've done in other places and our software is able to handle them. Mm-hmm. Should this body come up with some different calculation model that we have not seen, then we would have to determine whether that was configuration or customization.
Follow-up.
Representative Elkins.
So the analysis done by staff and supplemented by work that I've done on my own tells me that your customer base includes states that do some that do weight, some that do value, most of which do depreciation schedule. So I'm guessing, and I'm looking for affirmation, I guess, that basically the system is customizable or configurable in those three dimensions, that there's quite a bit of basic flexibility there in terms of having mixes between weight, value, and age.
Mr. Boone.
Madam Chair, Representative Elkins, yes, that is true. Our vehicle solution is in 11 states in production and two more underway. And it is true that it's weight, age, things like that are major components that are used in other states. Mostly The challenge with weight is sometimes that weight amount is not available electronically.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Buna.
We've been having a...
Representative Elkins, did you have a...
I'm sorry, Madam Chair,
okay,
yes.
I didn't understand that. Yeah. Thank you.
So as Ms. Randall's going to report to us shortly here, we have also been having problems with getting accurate value the way it's been historically defined in Minnesota. But there are states where they're using value, where the data has been reliably electronically available from some source.
Mr. Buna.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative Elkins, the source of getting that type of data is it's kind of a software product called Vintelligence. It's the same actual product that I believe Minlar's used as well. So it really comes down to the data points that are available electronically based on the information available. So, for example, we get a VIN of a vehicle.
Yep.
We run it through this third-party service, and we get a bunch of data back. And if those data points are inside that data, it's math. If those data points are not included in that data, that's where it gets challenging. So, for example, a standard passenger car, we don't know what the weight is. And during our discussions with MnDOT and DOR, I think we started to understand what is available and what isn't available, and I think it was kind of an eye-opener to everybody, including ourselves, that we would love to be able to do some of these things, but if the data points aren't available, it does become something that either has to be manually overridden or some other method of getting that data.
Thank you
very much, Mr. Boone and Representative Elkins. That was some really good questions that kind of helped to demonstrate the process here. I would say, though, that Ms. Randall, when she gets eventually into her report, I think some of the questions you're asking will help to be clarified by her report rather than Mr. Buna. But I really appreciate your being willing to come up to the table and answer these questions on the spur of the moment. Is there anybody else? Yes, go ahead. You don't? All right.
Thank you. Madam Chair, if I could just a question of clarity to put a fine point on this for our vendor partner. So I understand, is there any expectation that they would adjust their approach to development or their requirements for the system before the law is actually changed based on the recommendations of this body?
Mr. Buna, do you want to respond to that? That's more of a legislative question. I don't know.
Madam Chair, intended as a question
yes.
for this.
Well, I think as Commissioner Anderson Kelleher stated as well, but we have a statute that still requires us to do this. So we can ask a question about that, but the thought of waiting for a law to change in this situation would put us at risk, I believe, of even getting the software completed. Sorry, Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, I think a finger has been put on, you know, kind of an awkwardness of the timing. I mean, mm-hmm. we have to do this work. We have to have this conversation, figure out how we want to proceed on calculating registration taxes. Mm-hmm. But those are also a function of the law. And so then the dilemma becomes, you know, the recommendation will come forward out of this entity to the full legislature who may or may not concur. In the meantime, we have a development process proceeding, and is that delay in the enactment of the law going to substantially slow the development work or not? So we need to kind of struggle with that question in this body as we develop the January report, because the flip side, of course, is that a bunch of development work gets done that's moot, and we go to some expense, and you know, and then can we unwind it if need be because the legislature doesn't agree with what we recommend? So we need to figure that out.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. I would say also that we come back into session on February 11th and that we may have the ability to do both in the sense that in anticipation, it sounds like there's a great deal of flexibility so we can work that through. But nevertheless, the point of having a broad-based task force with governor representatives and the private sector, that we would come to a consensus and then we could fast-track the legislative bill in both bodies and to the governor. I think that would take some bipartisan cooperation and some work in regards to the process in both the Senate and the House. But remember, we do have a very broad-based representation on this task force that I would certainly hope that if we come out with a recommendation that the having this go through the legislature needs to have due process, committee hearings, floor action, all the things that we usually would do. But hopefully, but I would agree with you, Senator Dibble, that it's a process to be worked out and that when we come into session February 11th, that would be important to deal with that and hopefully make those two things work. But waiting until March 1st for a report, though it is a statutory deadline, it's at least by then. Doesn't mean you can't do it before then or make decisions on some of those things. So let's continue to work together as a task force. Mr. Hines.
Mike Hintz, Minnesota Deputy Registrar's Association. Thank you, Madam Chair. As Mr. Buna hinted, his system of FAST and MNLARS currently use Vintelligence as a third-party data source for information. Vintelligence is at the mercy of the manufacturers to provide that data. So when Ms. Randall does her presentation and shows the scatter chart of numbers that we're all familiar with, that happens because Vintelligence doesn't have the data. So sometimes we use another third-party company. We use VinDecoder, which probably still uses Vintelligence. But that mixed source of information is what causes the scatter chart to look the way it does. So we're dealing with that now in MNLARS, and that same lack of data will be present in FAST because they're going to be accessing the same data source. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. I appreciate that very much. And those are generally one of the reasons why we're doing this is to work that out, that we consider that in the in this new software, that we try to anticipate some of those things and make it just a whole lot simpler for everybody involved. Well, I think I'm sorry. Thank you very much, Ms. Backus.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just as a follow-up to that, I think it would be helpful if we could get a list of the data points that aren't available in Vintelligence as we're making this decision, because we're going to speak to a couple, but there might be some other of these funding scenarios that we're not sure whether Vintelligence has the information or not. So if the committee could be provided that, I think that would help inform our decision.
Thank you very much, Ms. Backus. And I would hope that that is probably one of those things that could be included in the report upcoming as far as the decision factor, those data points. Ms. Schroeder, would it be possible to include that in your...
Madam Chair, yes, we'll work with our partners and do our best to get that included.
I understand. Thank you very much. Senator Jasinski.
Madam Chair, a question for Mr. Buna. So if other states are doing it based on weight, and you're saying those data points don't exist for that weight, how do they do it?
Mr. Buna.
Madam Chair, Senator Jasinski, often it's broken down by class of vehicle, whether it's a passenger vehicle, whether it's a truck, things like that, the type of use of the vehicle. So there's often a mixed calculation. If it's a passenger vehicle, it may be strictly by age, and if it's a commercial vehicle where we do get that gross weight, we use that weight in that calculation. So, again, those states are under the same kind of restriction of the data points that are available and what's on their registration form, which would be similar to Minnesota, but every state has their own little nuances.
Thank you, Mr. Buna. Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Okay, seeing no other hands here, I will go ahead. Thank you very much, Mr. Buna. I so appreciate you being here, being willing to come down, and for your answers. Thank you. Okay, Ms. Randall, I think we've set the stage. I think we're eager to hear your report and the information you can provide. So if you just go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Task Force members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for OLA's Program Evaluation Division. I'm happy to be here today to provide kind of a refresher on our report that we issued last September of 2018, on MNLARS transaction accuracy. Sounds like there were some people in the room who've already maybe studied and read this report, so maybe you can either help me or chime in as we review this year-old report. Just real quickly, I know we're focused on passenger vehicle registration here today, but just to set the context, when we issued this report last year, we focused on four broad categories of transactions in MNLARS, and our scope was from July 24th of 2017, which was the launch date for MNLARS, through the end of February of 2018, and we were looking at the accuracy of these different types of transactions. We did find inaccuracies across all types of transactions, but really the rate of inaccuracy varied significantly. So there were very low rates of inaccuracies for a number of types of transactions, but the registration tax was really what jumped out at us, and which is what I think precipitated the creation of this task force and these subsequent discussions. So just jumping to it, we found that 40% of the registration tax transactions were inaccurate. 40% is a big number when we conduct audits, evaluations, special reviews. I mean, I think 10% raises eyebrows. 40% is kind of eye-popping. We got this number based on sample testing, and we found that there were a lot of different reasons for the inaccuracies in MNLARS. We did find some programming errors. We also found some errors that were introduced by users. The big one, which I think really is the focus of the task force, is the data integrity. You know, you have bad data coming in. It doesn't matter how amazing your system is. You're going to have bad data going out. And then, of course, this was all compounded by really complex laws, laws that in some cases were difficult to understand, or there were different interpretations of how to apply it. And then also laws, and I think this is really important, that allowed these bad data to persist in the system for years and years and years, so that once somebody kind of was tagged with an inaccurate base value, that inaccurate base value persisted with them for the next 10 years in calculating the registration tag. So I kind of called this a perfect storm, where there were a lot of different factors. So the key thing here to talk about is, of course, base value. And I know I'm speaking to a very knowledgeable group, but I'm just going to make sure we're all on the same page. I'm a little embarrassed to explain to you what VIN means, because I think you all know it better than I do. But I'm still just going to do it for the sake of, again, making sure we're all on the same page. All right, I'm certain you all know what a passenger vehicle is. It is a car. Or, you know, it's your standard vehicle. It's probably what you use to drive here today, unless you took transit. It does include pickup trucks and vans. It excludes motorcycles, commuter vans. Okay. Base value is really the crux of the issue here. It is the value in the system that's assigned to your passenger vehicle. It is defined in law as the lowest manufacturer suggested retail price plus the destination charge, which is essentially the shipping charge, basically, to get the vehicle from the manufacturer to the dealer. It is not necessarily the price you paid for the car. It is not necessarily the price in the window of the car. It is not a value that's easy to find. Frankly, I worked on this report, and I don't know that I could find the base value for my car, at least the accurate one. It is tricky, and there's not a lot of transparency around it, and I think that's something that we should be concerned about. But it is in law as the basis for determining the registration tax. And this really is what it all comes down to, what the representative from FAST talked about in terms of those data not being available and therefore it kind of perpetuating all the problems. I mean, spot on. I was a little concerned to hear that that problem also exists perhaps with weight. And so I think that's an interesting point for the task force to think about as you guys do your work. All right, here we are explaining VIN to people
Madam
who
Chair.
Know it better than I do.
Excuse me, Ms.
Sure.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you. Real quick question. The base value, my understanding is that it's not necessarily what's on the sticker of your car, that every car of the same model, make, model, and year should have the same base value regardless of whatever extras have been added to that car. So if you got the luxury trim package, that is not included in your base value calculation, which I think is one of the things that makes it so hard to find.
Madam Chair and Representative
Ms. Randall.
Thank you. Yes, I would agree. And this is going to jump me to the concept of VIN descriptor. So hang on, but yes is the short answer. You're correct. But there's a little bit of explanation behind it that I just want to cover. So VIN is the vehicle identification number. It's a 17-digit alphanumeric identifier that uniquely identifies your car. The VIN descriptor is the first 10 digits of that VIN. And it is based on the make, model and model year of the car. So Representative Elkins, if you and I both have a, it's always awkward because I'm not good with cars, a 2015 Toyota RAV4, same model, we would have the same VIN descriptor. The last seven digits of our VIN would be different, uniquely identifying our things. If you have a fancy leather seat package and I don't, we would still have the same VIN descriptor. The key in how registration tax is calculated in Minnesota is that the base value is assigned at that VIN descriptor level. It's not assigned at that VIN level, it's assigned at the VIN descriptor level, which then does ignore the things like the options and the trim line. So you're right, it makes it difficult to find for my car what my base value is. Also, the statutes talk about the base value using the lowest MSRP out there. And so that also sometimes can change over time, which adds another level of complication. All right, so these are the key terms that I think matter in terms of understanding how registration tax is calculated. But again, the main issue here is the base value VIN descriptor interaction. So how is it calculated? This is for a new passenger vehicle. It's $10 plus 1.25% of that base value. Over the first 10 years of a vehicle's life, this value is depreciated by 10% each year. 11 years and later, it's $35 flat tax. Everyone's nodding. That's good. I think the thing that is important to understand on how we did our analysis is that we applied a concept of what we considered to be a fair tax, which is if Representative Elkins and I own the same make, model, and year of a vehicle, we should pay the same registration tax. Just like if we had the same income and the same deductions and exemptions, we should pay the same income tax. So what we viewed as fair is that it would be equal. If we own the same vehicle, we would pay the same amount of tax. So we identified any variability as a problem. So we defined an inaccurate registration tax calculation as something that was different than the others. So variability equaled bad in our kind of analysis. Well, as you all know already, we found a high variability among the base values, which meant different people were paying different registration taxes, again, on the same vehicle. And here we get to the scatter plot that was referred to. This is kind of a dramatic example, and so I don't mean to kind of inflame the issue, but I think it really lays out all of the concerns that we had when we were looking at registration tax transactions in MNLARS. Again, if you think about the concept that registration tax is based on base value is assigned at the VIN descriptor level, and everybody who owns the same make, model, year of car should pay the same amount, there should be one base value for each VIN descriptor. It should be a one-to-one match. So in the sample we looked at, there were 2,055 Ford F-150 model year 2018 pickup trucks entered in our sample. And there were 130 different base values for this one VIN descriptor. So that means that there were 130 different tax amounts. The people who own the same vehicle were taxed. There were 130 different tax amounts. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about variability and concerning and inaccuracy. The other thing that, frankly, was startling was the range of values. And you can see that here. This is also on page 12 of your report, if it's easier to see there. So one Ford F-150 model year 28 pickup truck was assigned a base value of $2. Another was assigned a value of almost $70,000. Based on the work we did, we thought the correct, and I kind of put it in quotes because, again, it's hard to find, but the correct base value should have been this $38,925. There were no vehicles in our sample at that value. There were over 900 at this $43,020 value. So somehow people were kind of starting to focus on that as the right one, again, in quotes, but it's hard to know. So this was troubling, right? And if you look at the bottom of page 12, it kind of plays out the four scenarios of what this means for an individual and how much tax they would pay over the 10 years of owning that vehicle. So, you know, if you have the $2 base value, clearly you're paying a lot less in tax over the life of that car than the person who had that $70,000 value, the person who had the $2 base value over 10 years paid $350 in registration tax. The person with that highest value paid over $4,000. So this is what we're talking about when we talk about inaccuracy and the concerns around variability. Okay, so why did this happen, right? What is causing the problem? And so for this, I need to kind of walk through how we looked at the data and then what we considered inaccuracies again. So on this table, you see the first row says inaccurate initial base value. That's a term that we made up as we did our audit. And you can see that that rate is 70%-ish, between 66 to 77% inaccurate. I mean, if 40% was eye-popping, this is, you know, I don't have an adjective. And this gets to what the representative from FAST was talking about. So I go out and I buy my car. I buy a brand new car. Well, what we have been told is that the base value, the lowest MSRP, may not be established by the manufacturer for 6 months to 18 months after I can buy that car. So you have this really long period of time where there is not a definitive base value for the car. And once there is that base value, it's like populated in a reference table in MNLARS, is how I think about it. So I buy my car, I go to my deputy registrar, I say I'd like to register my car. They enter it in, it pings against this reference table in MNLARS. Well, if there's no value yet, it returns a zero. That's what we have for our initial base value, right? So it comes back zero in about 70% of our sample. Okay, so then it's up to the deputy registrar to figure out what base value are we supposed to use when we to calculate registration tax. So the first thing they do, I'm told, is to then go to a third-party vendor. Maybe they'll have it. Well, a lot of times they don't have it either. And then they can go to the dealer. They can go to a reputable pricing guide like NADA or Blue Book to come up with a value. And those are good, but you can see why this would lend itself to variability, right? I mean, there's not a definitive source for this information. They did improve it. I mean, you can see we went from about 70% rate of inaccuracy to closer to 40%. Better. Still not acceptable, I don't think, for us or for you. And I will note that, you know, you have human intervention at that point. And so we did see instances where the deputy registrars introduced errors. We saw places where they put in the odometer or the weight of the vehicle rather than the base value. So yes, making it better, but still not getting it to where we need to be. And then, of course, it's not surprising that the actual registration tax has a similar error rate because that final base value is really the core component of that calculation. A couple of things I want to say because I think it's really important. FAST may be amazing. They probably are. They can't program their way out of the bad data in base value. And I think that's really important to understand. It's not, I mean, I don't, there were other problems with MNLARS. This wasn't a programming problem. This is a bad data in problem. And so, I mean, I think that's why you all are set up here to do this work. I think it's really important work. I know we have FAST coming in, and again, they will be great, but they can't make base value be a certain value or definitive value in the first, again, 6 months to 18 months of a vehicle's life. And that's something that's, my understanding is that's from the manufacturers. And so that's not something we can legislate our way out of, I don't think. Well, we can if we abandon base value, but if we want to stick with base value, we're going to have to figure out a way to deal with all that uncertainty in the first, again, 2 years or so. Okay, so.
Madam Chair.
Well, Representative Elkins, I would like to wait now until Ms. Randall finishes her presentation. Go ahead.
So how did this affect customers? I think we all can see how this affected customers. People were charged the wrong amount. Some people were overcharged, and some people were undercharged. I do have, I think on page 16, there's a call-out box with some other, no, not 16, page 18 of the report, there's a call-out box with some other kind of ranges of over and undercharging. Most people were charged the wrong amount by a little bit. You know, it wasn't always these dramatic amounts. But really, anything that's wrong, I think, is a problem. And then we get back to that complexity in the law, which states that a person cannot pay more in their registration tax than was previously paid on that vehicle, even if that vehicle switches owners. So once you have
artificially low amount, that $2 base value, that person got lucky and got lucky for 10 years because that value is in there, and by law, we can't charge that person the quote-unquote right amount. So there's, again, complexities with the data, and then there's these complexities with the law that kind of amplify it. So, again, the law is tricky. Users help, but also make things worse. Programming errors. I mean, this is something where, you know, FAST could help. If somebody entered in a $2 base value for a brand new pickup truck, I mean, why isn't a flag going off on the system saying, are you sure? You want to double check that, right? I mean, I know when I don't enter all the numbers of my phone number, it doesn't let me move forward in a transaction. So there are some programming things that possibly could be done around the edges. But, I mean, if you enter in a $35,000 versus $55,000, I'm not sure that the system would be able to correct or, you know, flag something like that. So then you have these data integrity problems that persist. And then, again, the law doesn't necessarily allow corrections. So we have a number of recommendations in the report. Several of them at the time were based or focused on DPS and Minute about improving the system. I'll just jump to these two because these are more, I think, in the purview of the task force. So it's basically let's work together somehow to figure out how to do a correct amount of registration tax. And, you know, we have a couple of thoughts on things the task force could consider. The first is if you want to stick with base value, okay, big if, I understand, but if you wanted to stick with base value, you could take the approach of, okay, the first 2 years are uncertain, and we're going to accept that uncertainty. But at year two, we have more confidence in the base value amounts. And the legislature could say to DPS, could require them and give them the authority at year two to say, okay, year two, establish the true, quote unquote, true base value for this vehicle going forward. And then you'd have to amend the law that allows you to charge more to people who maybe were undercharged before. So that's one approach. You stick with base value. First 2 years, it's a little bit of a roll of a dice. I mean, it's not that terrible, but at times it is. But then 2 years, we set the true value. That true value then sticks with the car going forward. And, you know, adjustments get made, and we adjust the law to allow that. That's one way. The other way is what I think you all are more truly considering is simplifying this section of law and perhaps moving away from base value and moving away from something where the data aren't as certain. Again, disheartened that weight isn't more available electronically. But one thing I did do, and I do have a handout, sorry for the last minute nature of it, just because in the last couple days when I learned that the other information wasn't going to be available for you all. This is probably something you've all seen. It's a map that NCSL, the National Conference, everyone's nodding. All right. It's old information, but maybe it'll be helpful. National Conference of State Legislatures put this together based on 2017 data, but it does show what other states are doing. So it shows which states are doing a flat rate for registration, which are doing weight-based, value-based, age-based, or other. I will just note that one of the others is Missouri, and they do it based on horsepower, which I just thought was unusual and noteworthy. I'm not recommending it or anything. I just thought, wow, there's a lot of ways to do it. I will also point out that we are not the most complicated, so we can take comfort in that.
Small comfort, Ms. Randall, but we appreciate any help.
Iowa has it seemed to me a very complicated system that used weight and list price and age. So, I mean, it could be worse, but maybe we can learn some things from these other states. Again, I don't have, you know, the numbers, and I haven't run the data, but I think seeing what some of our peers are doing can be helpful. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer questions, but that's really the end of my formal comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Randall. I just wanted to clarify many of these variations, but even on value-based, there are many variations of value-based, many variations of any even one of these. So if you started doing that, this would look like a patchwork quilt, whereas this is still somewhat like it, but it could be even more complicated if you took in all those variations. Thank you for your presentation. Appreciate it very much. Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Just a quick question to Ms. Randall, and I apologize if you've already indicated as such in the report, betraying that I didn't read it as closely as maybe I should have already said it. But why is it that the base value is not available for 12 to 18 months after the vehicle is on the market? Is that to give the market time to kind of settle in on what the market will bear for the sale of that car, or what is the reason for that?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, it's a great question. I don't have a good answer. I mean, I have been told that it comes from the manufacturers, and they don't provide it in a timely way. I'm looking at people who have told me that information, but I don't know if we know. There may be somebody around the table who knows better than me why. Sorry.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. You know that it is, not necessarily right. Why, right? Is there anybody who wants to comment on that? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I asked this question last session. I was with some meeting with people. I can't remember what it was, but something to do with rebates, I think, figured into that as far as the value and rebates. Amber or Ms. Backus, do you remember at all? I think you were in that meeting, but I know we discussed for some reason that came out late afterwards due to rebates. Is that correct?
Ms. Backus.
Madam Chair, Senator Jasinski, I'm not exactly certain, but that might make sense, actually, that those could play into figuring out over time then what that lowest value is, because those programs change every 30 days, so the first couple years of vehicles on the market, that could greatly influence that.
Thank you, Ms. Backus. Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Representative Elkins, and then Ms. Anderson-Kelleher, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, probably a couple of questions, and I think probably, well, I'll throw this out to anybody in the room who knows it, but I think the person who's going to know the answer to this question is Joan Redwing. So, Judy, you made a reference to a table in Minlars where all of the reference base prices are stored by VIN identifier, basically. So so there is a value in that table for each 10-digit VIN identifier, but somehow the current value in that table isn't being associated with individual vehicles automatically. Maybe it is when the vehicle is first registered and then it changes later. But the question probably I think this is going to be to you, Joan, is. The fact that there are different values tells me that at some point a value is being taken from somewhere and associated directly as an attribute of the vehicle itself. And do you know, is it being drawn from that the base table, or is it just going there directly? I'm probing as to, is there a path to easily fix this problem on an interim basis possibly?
Okay, welcome. Glad to have you here. Would you just state your name and title for the audio record?
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joan Redwing. I'm the CBTO of Department of Public Safety. And thank you, Representative Elkins. That lookup table,
yep,
is manually configured by the DVS team.
Yes.
And so as that data becomes more reliable,
yep,
that is manually put in by the DVS staff members. And then that becomes kind of the gold standard for lookup.
Yep.
But there are some makes and models that even that VIN descriptor, they don't comply with the VIN descriptor being the first 10 digits. Certain makes and models are even more variable than complying with that VIN descriptor. So there's opportunity for variability there. And then again, there's that statute on the books that you can't pay more than you did in a prior registration period.
Right.
So even if we do identify something, we can't go back and fix it.
Yeah, so
thank you, Ms. Redwing. Representative Elkins?
Yeah, follow up. So it's that law that says you can't correct it seems to be a big part of the problem. Because otherwise, it seems sense to me as a data architect that what you would want to do is instead of storing that value on the vehicle entity, you would just want to, anytime you wanted to know what the base value of the vehicle was, you would just look up to this lookup table to get the current perceived to be most accurate value, and that value would be applicable to any vehicle that had that 10-digit VIN descriptor or its variant. would that be a practical way of solving that particular problem of the variability in the value?
Ms. Redwing.
Madam Chair, Representative Elkins, yes, that would be good if we had that law changed so that we could go back and send, and very often send notices out to people saying there was an error and this is what needs to be paid or corrected, yeah, or refunded.
Ms. Randall?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Elkins, I would want to add, though, that I think DPS would need to be directed to do that on a regular basis, because I don't think it's happening. I mean, it certainly wasn't happening when we did our review. You know, we found those errors, so it wasn't something DPS was proactively doing. And I also would point out that that table, as Ms. Redwing said, isn't populated until there's some, I think, certainty around what that base value is.
Okay.
So, again, it might take a year or two until there's some confidence around that value.
So, Madam Chair, what
Thank you, Ms. Randall. Representative Elkins?
What I'm hearing is that the current state of that table really isn't where it needs to be. It doesn't contain all of the base values that we really need, probably even now.
Ms. Redwing?
Madam Chair, Representative Elkins, table is not, we can't update that table because the information is not available.
Yeah.
So when the information is available, we can update the table, but base value is kind of like if I buy a television on sale and Ms. Randall bought it at full price, you know, part of the thing is I pay less sales tax because I bought something on sale, or she paid more sales tax because she bought it at full price. So that's kind of, it's basically an asset-based value. And because that value of that asset changes, and Senator Jasinski was completely correct, that rebates and things change that value of that asset, which is the vehicle, on a regular basis.
Thank you, Ms. Redwing. Representative Elkins, does that take care of your two questions, or do you have one more? But before we go to your second, I'd like to give Commissioner Anderson Keller her an opportunity.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious, and I think that neither of you would probably be able to answer this, but maybe Mr. Buna can be on deck here. I've always loved looking at what other states do, but I think there's a big caveat on this one, and that is who in the last 5 years has modernized their registration system? Because it's one thing to go from a current basis to a new registration system using FAST, but which states are looking at this critically, and what are they doing here? And maybe if you can't answer that, we could have someone else or someone at a future meeting answer that. Because, Madam Chair, here's my concern. Mm-hmm. Now we have 8 million records over sitting at MnDOT that we're going to run some analysis on, but from my past life for 8 years in the world of technology, if you have bad data, you have bad data. And so I'm quite concerned right now that what we're going to give you will give you a snapshot of 8 million records with possibly some real bad data in it, and we're going to try to make a decision on this, whereas maybe what we should be doing is a hybrid approach, which is, yes, we can run those values, and we can see that it's revenue neutral generally, but what we really want to be doing in Minnesota is we want to look towards what is the standard or the state of the art going forward instead of the system 25 years ago or 30 years ago. And so I think we have an opportunity and time to leap forward here in our thinking, but to do that, we can't rely on this data then. So that's one thing. The next thing is, I do believe that, you know, honestly, you could flag any number of these items to have not go past moments in the system. So if somebody puts in $1, that is going to flag that you can't go past that. And not only that someone has to override it, but that you need some sort of supervisor override on that thing. That is just not acceptable in my mind. But the other thing, Mr. Buna, is I am curious, what is the purpose? Are we building this on Vintelligence? And what is the purpose of Vintelligence then, if it doesn't have, I mean, what do we get from Vintelligence? We can tell that a car is not stolen. We can tell that a car is not, I mean, what is it that we get out of this source of data that's really adding value to the system versus the thing that we're all really looking for here, which is if we stick with base value or whatever it is as our first marker in the system, what does Vintelligence do for us as a data source?
I think that that's an excellent question, but I prefer the conversation that you started with, which is where do we want to go? We can understand the complexities of what it is today, Vintelligence or some of those other things, but I think your first premise is really valuable in saying, but what is and what should it be? Because I think that's more, I think the purpose of the task force in regards to looking at all of these, though they may be imperfect as they are, it's kind of that analysis piece of information that we look at. But I would say that, yes, I'm not quite sure exactly who or which, or it's a combination of that says, you know, where is, and by the way, through NCSL, we can do a question. They may have this data that they did, but they can also put out a question to all 50 states and say, what are you doing right now? What are you thinking right now? And that's one way we can get some of that data, because this is from NCSL to begin with, so we can ask for a freshening of that data. That might be a source.
Madam Chair, respectfully, I really would like to understand, though, what we get out of Vintelligence at a high level to understand what is the value of that product, and are we building our new registration system with that? What do we get out of it?
I think, Mr. Buna, or Ms. Redwing, I'm giving people time to think a little bit about who's going to answer this question and what are they going to do. So I did have a reason for doing that. But
Madam Chair, Tim Lano, Assistant Commissioner over at DPS. I'd like to call it Mr. Tony Anderson.
Well, we're letting, you're wanting to have who again? Who's your?
Mr. Tony Anderson, who's the Program Director for the FAST MNLARS vehicle.
Okay.
System.
So you're here, sir? Okay. I thought we only had one person from FAST.
We came prepared. He's one of our employees at DPS.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. Thank you very much. Again, for the record, name and title.
Thank you. Tony Anderson, Program Director with Driver and Vehicle Services. So we receive information from Vintelligence that provides us specific information in regards to the engine size of the vehicle, the body, the style, the trim. So we receive a number of key fields that we leverage. We subscribe to a package. There is a number of different levels of that package that we can receive. So we've got the standard package, which provides us, you know, just doing a quick look here, you know, 30 different items. And that grows can grow exponentially depending on if we go with deluxe or, you know, custom. So we leverage the file that we receive from Vintelligence to extract some of those key functions.
Madam Chair.
Okay, this, Commissioner, does that...
It helps, but Madam Chair, could Mr. Anderson tell us, so the new system is also going to have an integration with the Vintelligence product, yes?
Could we clarify that, Mr. Lina, because there's a difference between what is currently happening and the task force and the potential changes, but Mr. Lina, would you go ahead, Mr. Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. With the current path that we're on, we would still leverage Vintelligence. So there's a couple other vendors that are in the marketplace that offer the solution. Vintelligence is one of the industry leaders, and that's one of the reasons why we selected to use them. So you've got, you know, NADA, you've got VinCheck. There's a multiple different groups that do offer it, and experiences that Vintelligence offers the most comprehensive information.
And Madam Chair, so in the system, in data coming in, Vintelligence is one reference point. The table built and referenced by DVS staff is another reference point. Is there anything else we should know as a group of people sitting around the table about data coming into the system or checking against the data so that we can be fully informed as, you know, either what the current system is operating on or what the new system in terms of data will take in?
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Those are the key functions that I'm aware of. And like I said, you know, during testimony, you heard about like deputy registrars inputting that from the information from dealerships. So that'd be kind of a third variable, but I definitely, you know, yield to kind of our experts with the deputy registrars or with the dealers on that information to clarify.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Okay. I would say, Mr. Anderson, if we went to a different one, and the examples here are flat rate, weight-based, we use value-based, age-based, and other, and so on, would this VIN intelligence or some version of that from whatever company, would that be used at all, or would it maybe not need to be used? So is it unique to the value-based, is my question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Without seeing the document, I definitely, you know, it would be a speculation on my part in regards to that. But we would need to take a look and see, you know, each jurisdiction is, thank you, it, you know, is very unique. You know, flat rate, you know, I mean, that's going to be based on that specific jurisdiction. You know, your weight base is, of course, you know, the vehicle, the value base. You know, different jurisdictions have calculation for that, you know, for that value base. For, you know, Minnesota, we take that lowest, lowest MSRP. Other jurisdictions take, you know, a different percentage of that MSRP. So I would need to do a deeper dive.
One of my questions also then is on the value-based. Is there a value-based, because value-based is a whole big category, right? So if we could possibly choose one of the value-based that has a more definitive table that would take away some of those vagaries of time and some of the other issues, could you comment to that? Ms. Backus, sounds like she might be able to weigh in on this. Ms. Backus?
Madam Chair, again, I would just like to point folks to the statute, because we get confused in Minnesota because we're not only taking that MSRP, we're saying the lowest value of the MSRPs, and I don't think other states do that, and that's the data point that's missing. So in 168.013, subdivision 1A, that's clause C. So you take the MSRP, and then you take the lowest value. I was just Googling, and if you... I think we're the only state that does that, because if you Google base value, it's only Minnesota references. So it's that piece of it that makes it so hard. If we just went off the MSRP, this would be a lot easier, because that's available at the time of sale. That's on the Monroney sticker that's attached to your car. And then that only varies by a couple hundred dollars from VIN to VIN, I guess, those first 10 digits. So it would be pretty comparable. It's when we get into this lowest value of all those MSRPs that we just can't figure it out, and nobody else is doing it, and I don't think anybody else is ever going to provide it in a way to us that's consistent and transparent and easy to figure out.
Thank you, Ms. Backus. I think that is very helpful. Okay. Ms. Smith.
I think also, too, one of the deceptors in this system is the destination fee, because we can have a brand new vehicle come and get titled in Minnesota, and then we have an individual, say, from Wisconsin come over with the same vehicle. And again, they may be bought in the same month, but they may end up with different destination fees. So we are ending up with amounts all over the place, and we have to guess on what that destination fee is, which we're not comfortable with.
Thank you very much, Ms. Smith. That's helpful. Additional information. So, Representative Elkins.
Thank you. This is turning out to be very productive, I think. So, I think what I heard from my earlier exchange with Ms. Randall and Ms. Redwing is that they don't believe, and I don't think anybody else here believes, that it is feasible to maintain a reference data table that would be current and accurate at the 10-digit VIN number. Here I see lots of nodding heads. So, so then the question, specific question I would have is that what is the nature of the vehicle value that we would get on the Vintelligence file? Can somebody describe how that value that would come in on the Vintelligence file has been derived? Is it just straight MSRP? Does it not include destination charges? Is there someone who could characterize what that value is constructed from?
Well, Mr. Anderson, you're at the table, and I'll give you that opportunity to answer that. But I want to be really careful, members, that we have others as well that may be able to comment on this, and we can have more than one.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Anderson, that at anybody in the room,
anybody at the table or in the room, exactly. So, Mr. Anderson, we'll give you first dibs on this wonderful question.
Great, thank you, Madam Chair. So destination charge, like Ms. Smith mentioned, is not provided, and it is not in the Vintelligence file. I've just got a reference point that I'm just kind of looking at while we're talking here. So for the specific example that I have, it breaks down we used Ford F-150 for the presentation in here. So it breaks down by the, Crew Cab XLT, Crew Cab King Ranch, the Lariat. So based on that VIN, we'll kind of dictate. And then from that, we will then know what MSRP is kind of associated then from there. And that is then provided by from the manufacturer, not the dealership, the manufacturer.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Ms. Redwing, I see you being very active, and would you? No? All right. Anybody else? Just a moment, Mr. Elkins. Is there anybody else who wants to make a comment to this initial question about intelligence? Okay. Representative Senator Jasinski? No. Okay, Representative
Thank you,
Elkins.
Madam Chair. I just want to make sure I'm clear. So the intelligence, the value on the intelligence file, is it related, is it the VIN level or at the VIN ID, the 10-digit level?
Mr. Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would need to do additional research. I'm just looking at the file that I have here, and it provides multiple levels. So I would need a research to give a accurate.
Is there anyone else who knows?
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. And on follow-up things like this, there's a question from us, if you would just follow up by getting that information to myself as well as Ms. Olson here, and then we'll push it out to the whole task force. Mm-hmm. That'll be the process if we want to do that. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just thinking out loud, and I know Commissioner Keller said state-of-the-art and what are other states doing and things like that. I think from what I've heard, and I've been involved with this for a while now, is we need something that's efficient, mm-hmm. that people understand, and the accuracy is high. And looking at the map of the NCSL, the flat rate, obviously, is the easiest method. Everybody understands it. More than half the states are doing it. I would like to see us move in that direction, that we can do that. And maybe someone who has more tenure than I do can explain why we're based on the system we are. But to me, and just in the time that I've been involved, it sure seems that a flat rate is the most efficient, the most accurate, and people in Minnesota can understand it. And that, to me, seems like the most sense of anything that we're going to do. It would be best for programming. It would be best for everything that you could do. So that's just open out there for a question.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. It is a really good question, and I would say that when Ms. Schrodel and your staff kind of go through that, we'll get some more of that. But, Commissioner?
Well, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Jasinski, having been in the legislature when Governor Ventura was in the legislature, I think we actually tried that system, and it was pretty clear pretty quickly that although Minnesotans appreciated the system, they did not appreciate what was happening with fairness in terms of how the system operates. So I think what was built into this system that we're trying to account for by having, by statute, it be revenue neutral is both maintain the ability to do the revenue source towards our dedicated roads and bridge fund, which is important here. But the second part of it is, I think that you are correct about what people would like to see. Sometimes you give up a lot in if there's a flat rate, that can give up the feeling of fairness. So that's why I ask about who's doing what in the last 5 years, because I think it's not that I want a state-of-the-art system. I want a system that actually accounts for the modern transportation system. And that's what I'm looking for, I guess, and people would be responsive to these. And I think it's just important to have that information, not what somebody did 25 years ago or 20 years ago, even like we did when I was in the legislature. We need something that is more responsive and still has that element of the, at least by statute right now, revenue neutral. So I think we did try this system once. We moved away from it, but I'm open. I'm open to ideas.
Senator Jasinski.
And just to follow up on fairness, and I kind of get that because, mm-hmm. You go out and buy a truck, and I've talked to some auto dealers on this, and you go out and you buy, let's say, a $50,000 three-quarter ton truck, and you go out and you pay, you know, let's say $500 a year, just for simple math, and you buy a one-ton truck for $65,000 and you pay $186 a year. I mean, there's some unfairness. Or my truck is 9 years old and I'm paying a higher fee, and a truck is 11 years old. We both do the same amount of damage to the road, but one is paying significantly less than the other. So, I mean, there's just lots of fairness issues that come up when you do that, and we'll never find the perfect thing, because even by changing something, we're going to go against what the normal people have been doing for so long. But I think when we do change this, if we change it to be efficient, it's going to be painful for a lot of people, because it is going to be a change. But if we look at it as saying, okay, we're going to take the heat for it because this is the most simple system, it's not going to have the errors, it's going to be the simplest for everybody to understand, and I understand where you're coming from, but there's just, when you talk fairness, there's a lot of fairness things out there that are not existing now. So if we do something like that, we could try and be less unfair. Well, that's a double negative, I guess. But somehow, I understand everything, and I appreciate the comments. I'm just trying to think a way that we can go forward that makes the most sense for everybody. And looking at the chart that we have in front of us, it looks like there's a lot of people that are based on that flat rate that may make sense. And if we go through the process, and we may have to grandfather it in, so we plan for it, obviously, so people can plan for it and say in 5 years we're shifting or whatever we're going to do, so it gives that phase-out period. Because I think it will actually affect the market from the auto dealer standpoint and the manufacturers, because if you're changing the benefit of a newer car versus an older car, is that going to stimulate or harm sales, or what's going to happen? So there's lots of things we have to think about when we do this, but I think long-term we really have to set ourselves up for what's the best in the future and beyond.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Mm-hmm. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to just kind of continue on with Senator Jasinski, I think the challenges that we face here when we deal with public policy is the same whether we're dealing with transportation or something else. We always run into also a history of culture and the cultural of policy and what it changes, as well as when we look at fairness, we also look at, in regards to fees and taxes, whether or not it's regressive or progressive. Mm-hmm. And so those are some of the challenges that we're going to have to struggle with, how in the long term and in the short term we migrate to whatever we think is fair, and how do we mitigate some of the needs of the people that we're actually trying to provide this program for, and how do we change that culture. So I think certainly a phased-in approach is probably something that we're going to have to deal with, but understand that this is also a cultural issue in which people are used to paying less every year for their vehicle. So it's something that's going to change, and something if we decide to go that way, and we need to also address that's going to be an issue.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Elkins, and
I'll make this comment quick. I think
if
we've agreed that the whatever we recommend is going to be recommended revenue neutral, and we abandon value and just go to flat rate, then obviously the registration fees on my Tesla go way down, and the registration fees on the 15-year-old beater owned by a junior college student are going to have to go way up, and that's just not fair.
Thank you. One of the things I think would be helpful, I did a little research on this topic, and in software development, when they talk about the data set, they have a table, and they draw from that table. There's a pointer to a particular table. Mm-hmm. So when you are doing, such as we are, making a change, it all depends upon what that might be. It's a lot of variables right now. But just so we understand in the concept, you can have the legacy table, which means somebody who's currently on this methodology can stay put, so that we don't disrupt what they've had an expectation, the depreciation chart, a variety of those kinds of things. And then there's a go-forward table, which means from this point going forward, a purchase or whatever those things may be come under this. So there are technology ways that they can accommodate the changing from one to the other, and that is where it is so important for Ms. Schrodel and the work that she does. One of the most important things is to know what is that revenue that we currently have, what do they currently generate, what's the potential. That is a huge amount of work and not to be underestimated as far as the challenge that that is, but it is an important concept that we just have to deal with. But I just thought mentioning that might be helpful to just know that there is a technology, because no matter what we do, we've heard about some of the complexities. Can we keep it a simple change or not? And I would agree that fairness in comes in kind of two things. And one is, though, the wear and tear on the road. Mm-hmm. Whether you buy an expensive car or sometimes a less expensive car, the wear and tear on the road is really fundamentally how this whole thing came to be. The justification for this additional thing was to be in that situation to do the road maintenance or hopefully sometimes also even new construction, which we're seeing plenty of around the state, by the way. I can hardly go anywhere without running into some detour or some construction, and I'm very happy for
Madam
it.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry about that.
I'm not
that.
Complaining whatsoever. It's just that I've learned side roads I never thought I'd get to see before. And you discover some new things. It's really kind of delightful in a weird sense of way. But at any rate, Senator Dibble, I'm going to give you a chance because Senator Elkins, I'll come to you next, and Senator Kent, and Ms. Smith.
Thank you. Well, so long as we're previewing the kinds of things we want to know and kind of where our thoughts are drifting, we're racing ahead to
yes,
a
I
few
think so.
Meetings here. You know, I did the count, and it's true. It looks like 27 states and as well as other jurisdictions, Puerto Rico, have flat rate. But it would be interesting to know what proportion of tab fees comprises their financing system. In Minnesota, it substantially approaches the gas tax. Not quite as much, but, you know, it's kind of gas tax, tab fees, and then motor vehicle sales tax, and then some of these general fund resources that we put into the highway user tax distribution fund. So that would be interesting to know how exposed their finance system is to tab fees and how flat rate interacts with that. And I'm glad you raised wear and tear because, you know, I think we also want to get some public policy. We want to at least consider these this change in the light of public policy goals. And we know that gas tax, for example, is a rough approximation to very rough, but a rough approximation to how much people drive. Weight is another factor that has an impact on the wear and tear of our roads. And so if we're talking about fairness from that sense, I think we should think about it in those terms as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Okay, Representative, Mr. Eitan, you raised your hand during another discussion. I want to try and stay on this subject in general. I've got her down. I've got Ms. Smith down on this point then, right? Okay, Mr. Eitan, and then I'll...
Madam Chair, I just wanted to raise the point that while certainly anything's, not anything, but most things are possible in terms of IT, in the scenarios we're describing, we should keep a close eye on what complexity we would be adding to development of the system and what that would translate to in terms of time and cost. The other item I would just raise so you don't have to come back to me is that we're very focused on the base value piece here. The OLA's report also identified some inaccuracies as it relates to statutory interpretation, especially around weighted vehicles, heavy trucks, where the OLA maybe wasn't in agreement on the statutory interpretation. That may be another area where we can fine-tune the system to get closer to the fairness principle that I know the OLA is working under. Thank you,
Mr. Eitan. And in reference to that statute, I had Ms. Stengel get out the 168.013 vehicle registration taxes. And as I read through this actually earlier in the year, we actually had two bills to deal with this, and we ended up with a task force, which is great, but at least it gets the discussion on the table. But when you start reading the statute, you have just an amazement that they're able to even make sense of it at all. And it certainly explains a lot of these, quote, inaccuracies but remember, sometimes legislation is passed, and at the time it seemed like a good idea, right? Nobody tries to pass bad laws. But nevertheless, we're here to deal with that, and that is the task that is set before us. And so with that, Representative Elkins, are you going in a new direction, or is it to this issue? Okay, all right. All right, Ms. Smith, and then Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, are you doing the same thing? Oh, well, okay. All right, I'm...
Thank you, Madam Chair. Fast, Ken, could you come up, please?
Mr. Buna, or both of you, come on up. Why don't you just both come on up, and then you're just right here, and...
I will talk to you later.
That sounded like a threat. Is it possible to be budget friendly and training and testing friendly? Anything that we come up with here as a task force is going to put us in a timeline that hopefully we can do. And if it's going to be with this new system, and to also be budget friendly with where we're at with FAST and customization, do you have a listing of what you've already developed in other states that would work, that you could share in something so that we can see what's already there, and then we would have an idea if we develop something different or look at a different process, then we'd be probably looking at more of a customization?
Mr. Buddha, do you want to respond to that?
Madam Chair, I know that I've worked with Tony Anderson from DVS on, he did some research on other things, and I did some research with the existing 11 FAST sites, and he put together kind of a spreadsheet of how they charge it for passengers, worth its weight or not versus flat tax or not. So he's done some analysis. So quite honestly, I'd like to defer that question to him.
Thank you, Mr. Buna, for pointing to Mr. Anderson. Very, very smooth. Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as Mr. Buna stated, of the jurisdictions FAST has done a system monetization with, we've got response back from, for example, like Oklahoma.
Mr. Anderson, those microphones are really short. We need you to really lean in.
Forward.
So we,
very
you're so
well.
Important. We want to hear what exactly. You have to say. It's important.
So thank you, Madam Chair. So just to kind of restate. So we've done some analysis in regards to other jurisdictions or other states that have completed system modernization with FAST. So I do have a spreadsheet that I can provide to the committee that outlines, for example, you know, Oklahoma, how do they do their registration? How do they do their renewals? Massachusetts, Nebraska, and such. So we can definitely provide that as it's probably a spreadsheet of about 40 different lines in regards to what other jurisdictions have done in their modernization with FAST.
Thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. We'll have that come forward, and then we'll get it out to all of you, which may be very helpful. Commissioner,
Madam
yes.
Chair, if I could just, before we distribute that, unless Mr. Anderson has put in this piece about the share of revenue mix and where the revenues go, because this was one of the instructive things during last session that I learned, that there are states where their gas tax actually is not dedicated to their roads and bridges by any means, and so they share that with other functions of state government. In our case, we are constitutionally dedicated. But it would be interesting if we could at least, if he hasn't layered on, and MnDOT could do this for you in terms of the 11 states you have, put on those mixes and the way that those states handle that, because that's data that we have and we look at a lot in terms of where different sources are coming in and how they're dedicated out to the system or not.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. So, Mr. Anderson, could you just add another column to that? And I think also not only where does that those funds go, but what, you know, if there's a percent or a third or something okay. that gives us a general idea about it, not just the fact that it does, because it makes a difference. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And similar question, if any of those states are using are weight-based, for example, knowing that we have issues with how you get weight, it would be interesting to know where those states are getting their weight data from.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Mr. Anderson?
Yeah, Madam Chair. It did not go into that much of a macro detail, so I will definitely work with Commissioner and the CFO for MnDOT to make sure that we do kind of tailor the spreadsheet to meet the needs.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. And I would also mention to you that Ms. Alexis Stengel from the Senate is the one who did some research with NCSL. I'm sure the House has it as well. But that you could work with those folks to get additional information, especially that may be a little bit more current, because sometimes, just like Minnesota, we're listed on here, but we're having a big discussion about what we're going to do. It would be good to know if other states are also considering leaving one of these and going to something else. Mm-hmm. And I think Ms. Stengel is here today and listening to this, and so I think that might prove helpful in our future discussions. Is there anything else while we're at it? Mr. Hines?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I think it was mentioned by someone earlier in the room that the destination charge is the big elephant in the room. It's the variable that we cannot put our finger on. And DVS, with Minlars and the problems we had with base values, DVS relaxed the rules on what the dealers could do to provide us as deputy registrars with more accurate information as to MSRP and destination. They were allowed to break that out on our applications for title. And the dealers always have MSRP, no matter what. And the destination charge is, and this is me making an assumption, is the true cost of the manufacturer to get the vehicle from manufacturing in Germany, across the sea on a boat, on a train, and dropped off in Chicago. And then the dealership has some sort of acquisition cost to get the vehicle to there. So that's always going to be a variable that no company of intelligence or anybody else is going to put a finger on. So it makes sense for us to think about kiboshing that whole destination charge, because I can always call my dealer and get that MSRP. It's a real number. It's on the window. It's required to be there. So if we're going to continue thinking about value-based, we should think of just the MSRP without the destination charge. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Ms. Schrodel.
Madam Chair, the destination charge is actually something that we, in the governor's budget last year, proposed to eliminate, so we'd be happy to provide you with the revenue estimate for that. It is relatively inexpensive, so we would be happy to provide that in the information we bring back to the task force.
Thank you, Ms. Schrodel. When you say it's relatively inexpensive, are you referring to the amount of revenue generated by it?
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct.
It seems as though it doesn't bring in a lot of revenue, but it sure seems to cost a lot in regards to all the efforts we go through to deal with it.
Madam Chair, yes, you are correct.
All right, wonderful. Senator Jasinski.
Madam Chair, we're seeing all those head nods. I make that motion now that we don't have any destination charge in our future of Minnesota.
I would say that may be one of the first consensus head nodding that to come forward in the future, and that's encouraging. Ms. Smith, did you have another comment or question?
Yes. When Minlars began, we noticed that there was no destination charge added into the MSRP. And literally, as a taxpayer, I put together a spreadsheet on that stating that I did a base value of $68,700. And over that 10-year period, when there was 10 of those sold, the first year it was $1,200,000. $200,000 was the loss in revenue. So I think as a taxpayer, that's a substantial amount. And the second year was $1,100,000. But over the 10-year period for that base value, it ended up being $6,300,000.
So, Ms. Smith, you are wonderful at number crunching and the details. We appreciate that very much. So can I ask you this? Out of the total revenue, what percent might that be?
That was only 10 vehicles, passenger vehicles, in one make, which was a Hyundai Santa Fe, which was the one I purchased. Okay. And so 10 vehicles sold in that month, which I think the dealers can say there's a lot more than that sold in a month. Mm-hmm. So that would increase. And when you look at almost $1,000 added to everybody's base value for that fee that sometimes jumps you up into the next tax manual category, which is what the differences are.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. So now we have another variable, the categories. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody. I think it was an excellent discussion and certainly sets the stage for the next meeting, where I think this was very helpful kind of base information to have, and turning out good in that respect. And I really appreciate everybody's information. Let me just check our agenda here to be sure. Yes, we've actually covered everything that I can see here on our agenda today. We do have another, Mr. Tabke, Representative Tabke, sorry, not as familiar with the House members these days. Thank you very much. That's another difference between the House and Senate. I'm on three task forces, and every House member always
forgets. Yes. So my question was, as I was unable to make the last meeting because I was out of town at a conference, but I understand that at that point you had mentioned to have these task force meetings every other week. What is the plan going forward, and what can we expect for the next meetings and that?
Yeah, great question. Thank you for bringing it up. That is an important discussion. Right now, it's dependent upon the information from Ms. Schrodel. And as I stated earlier, she and I will have a discussion, and any others, Commissioner, you as well, Ms. Corey as well, Commissioner Harrington as well, to set that date that is a reasonable date, but also recognizing that we can maybe upfront this discussion and then deal with the legislation question, as Senator Dibble and others have brought up, is certainly there. But meantime, we need to continue this work. So that date will be as soon as possible, but I, at this point, can't give you a precise date. As soon as possible, I will send at least a save the date for you. I know that we're coming into holidays of Thanksgiving and Christmas as well. So out of consideration for that, we'll certainly try and do our very, very best to make it a date that you can all be here. But we're probably going to ask you to, if at all possible, defer anything else to be here for the discussion. I'm sure it's going to be a very important one, as always. Representative Tabke.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. And I turned my mic on this time. I kind of forgot if I did or not. With that, if we could just set a tentative date as soon as possible, because I find myself in the position of being a working legislator, so it is difficult to get places, and so the sooner we can get this on the schedule for 2, 3, 4 weeks out, whatever it is, the better off it is for myself, and looks like other folks as well. So
I so agree with you, Representative Tabke. I don't think there's anybody who's here at this table that doesn't have a variety of things going on. One of the things I would like to ask you, we did this meeting today, 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock was the time frame, because I always think it helps to have an end point, an expectation for your time than just the start date. But my question for you also, since you're all here, we get to do this, is it better to be able to have everybody here to have a late afternoon, even an evening, just because especially this next meeting is going to be just really important? I can't imagine one isn't, but I'm just asking the question right now. Are folks open, if necessary, to a different time other than the middle of the day? We might come out with maybe a couple options, two or three options, and see what we can do to get the most here, respecting Ms. Schrodel's timing.
Madam Chair, I think we can nail Ms. down Schrodel. A date fairly quickly. I think we're looking sometime in the next couple weeks, so I think we'd probably... It's probably reasonable to think that sometime in that week, so if we looked at 2 weeks from today and sometime that week, I think we would be reasonably able to come back with some analysis.
That's very helpful to have that. So since we have you all here and we take a look, I don't know that I could, but 2 weeks from today is the week of November 11th, and let's just kind of everybody take a look, and we'll send out some options probably later in the week, give you a little more time if possible. But for all of you in preparation for that week, we're going to try and do that week or the week after if we need to in order to get the maximum amount of people here. So 2 weeks sometimes might be a little bit short to work that all in. But the next 2-3 weeks, definitely before Thanksgiving, it sounds like we can have that good presentation and discussion. Well, with that, members, I think we've concluded our agenda without any further items, and I will adjourn this meeting.